Welcome to the podcast. My name is Danny Cola. If this is your first time listening, make sure to hit subscribe on your favorite podcast platform so that you can join me in having some epic conversations that access higher levels of potential with creatives and professionals from all around the globe. Thank you so much for tuning in. Today's guest is Dr. Charlie Fagenholtz, a holistic chiropractor educating the masses on how to deal with common health issues like viruses, hormone imbalances, parasites, sleep issues, anxiety, depression, food sensitivities, headaches, and muscle and structural imbalances. Dr. Charlie is very passionate about genuinely improving the lives of others through holistic health and bringing practical modalities and remedies for self-healing. As a personal trainer and podcaster in the wellness space, I'm eager to learn more about what other practitioners are doing out there to help people come to the conclusion that they are capable of self-healing. Dr. Charlie is one of those guys doing some great work, helping people heal in a clinical setting, and putting out very interesting, truthful content about self-healing and advancing human consciousness. Check out Dr. Charlie's blog at www.drcharliedc.com/blog and his awesome podcast, Red Pill Your Healthcast, streaming on all podcast platforms. So without further ado, I hope you enjoy this podcast as much as I enjoyed having the conversation. All right, Dr. Charlie, thank you so much for your time today. I really appreciate all the information you're putting out when it comes to holistic health. You know, just to kind of give you a quick background, since high school, I got certified as a personal trainer in 07. I was in the field of training corporate gyms for the first few years, 2 or 3 years. Then I go back to college to get my education degree and I become a health and PE teacher in high school. And there I started to understand what self-actualization was. And like, I started asking myself deep questions, like, am I fulfilling my highest level of potential doing this job? And I've come to that realization, like, you know, 7, 8 years ago, where it's like, this isn't the end all be all for me. And I found myself in situations where I was like really overstimulated. And I started to think about, is this the right path? Am I leading the best life? Am I ultimately having an effect on people? Those answers were no. And then I started learning about what it means to be in chronic fight or flight. And we could unconsciously be there, or we can consciously be there, and rest and digest and what's happening in the body there. So let's start with that. What is fight or flight state? What is rest and digest state? And what's happening in the body when we're in chronic fight or flight? Let's just start with there and see how this goes.
Yeah. So in a nutshell, I mean, it's just an imbalance. You know, when we're functioning properly, we're in a rest and digest state. And when we're not, we're in a fight or flight. And what happens is your nervous system goes into overdrive essentially and starts secreting stress hormones. And I would say that people are just marinating in low level stress hormone all day long. Mm-hmm. And over time that breaks you down, because think about like if a zebra is running from a lion and that zebra is in fight or flight, there's no way that the body will ever prioritize the essentials of life in that moment. It's always going to go towards survival. And so that creates us to go on our back burners essentially. And over time, it's not sustainable for life. And so that's kind of it in a nutshell. What's really going on is your stress hormone is just shutting down your stomach acid, your digestion. It's destroying your brain. It's inflaming your whole system. And then everything kind of compounds on each other. It just leads to more issues. And there's always a saying that people will say is, you know, when they have kids or whatnot, is maybe they'll grow out of it. And I say to that, we don't grow out of anything. We grow into new things. And it's like a compounding effect. And so that's what it is basically in a nutshell. From the very basics of it, is that's how I describe fight or flight versus rest and digest.
Do you think that fundamentally that can be the root cause of disease? It starts with this unconscious level of fight or flight where you're expending all sorts of energy that you could be using for recovery. And because it's unconscious, we think that's normal. So would you say that like that's like the root of a lot of disease?
So I think it's the cause of a lot of disease, but I do not think fundamentally it's the root cause of all diseases, okay. If that makes sense, because for me, when I'm treating patients, I want to know what's getting them in that state in the first place. And so is it the foods that you're eating? Is it that you're not working out or you're not working out properly? Is it that you have subclinical infections? Is it that you have heavy metals from the environment? Is it that we live in a society with all these estrogenic chemicals and pesticides and herbicides? Is it that we live in a society that has significant amount of electromagnetic frequencies now, something that our genome have never been exposed to? And I always say this too. I say, anytime that someone's trying to improve society, we should ask at what cost to our health. And not too many things pass that question. They don't pass it. So like, for instance, you and I are talking on Zoom. It's great. You're in a different state. You're in Chicago area. I'm in Nashville, Tennessee. I get to see you. We get to talk. It's awesome. But we're also being exposed to a lot of electromagnetic frequencies from our computer, blue light from our computer screen that changes the way that our brain processes chemicals. And so it's over time, how sustainable is that? And that's really the goal.
Yeah, completely. Like, we're just in the infancy stages of this digital world, you know, and we're learning how to interact with it. You know, it's like fire keeps you warm, cooks your food, but also burns you. And without proper protocols, maybe just like finding ways to utilize it correctly, it can then, just the fact that just being in front of computer and being on your phone and sucked in, not to mention the manipulation of these platforms, that's overload of the nervous system as well. Talk to me about what you've seen clinically with this in kids, in adults. Do you see that there's been several types of side effects from constant bombardment from EMF and Wi-Fi and just the addiction of being manipulated through your phone? Like, that's a whole different conversation, but talk to me what you've seen and what are some of the issues that stem from that?
So it's a very loaded question. I've seen the way that I practice, I never knew I was going to do this. Honestly, I knew I was going to chiropractic school. I was going to go to pharmacy school. I decided to go to chiropractic school because when I did a job shadowing, it was the only doc that I followed that people walked in feeling crummy and left feeling really good. And every other doc that I followed, it was people who were crummy. The conversation wasn't good. It just didn't fulfill me, so to speak. And then I get into chiropractic school and I learn about frequency medicine and functional medicine and muscle testing and all these things that I never knew existed. And so it really, I went from thinking I'm going to work on pure athletes and and things along those lines. Now it turned into I'm treating patients who have been failed on everywhere, even children who've been failed on everywhere. They go to their pediatrician, they go to their specialist. And what happens is, as we become more and more as a society, we start departmentalizing people. And what that means is that if you have a heart issue, you go to a heart doctor that doesn't pay any attention to any part of your other parts of your body, your endocrine system, your gut. So now you start taking away the concept that anything in the body can cause anything. And so that has led to an infinite amount of patients, because the more you can view the body as a whole, the better people get. And to be honest, the more we go back to the basics, even in people who have diagnoses that I can't even pronounce, because they're just scary Latin names that tell you kind of what your symptom is, essentially. The more you go back to the basics, the better people get. And these basics are all around us. And back to your initial question on like, what have you seen? I mean, I see a lot of Lyme disease. I see a lot of chronic autoimmune issues. I see a lot of people who can't cope with stress. And it sounds so cliche, but if we can cope with stress, if we can adapt to our stress, I'm telling you, we would be so much healthier as a society, because it puts you on a back burner. It puts you in that fight or flight. And that's, you know, in a nutshell, that's kind of what I've seen.
Yeah. And that's kind of got me into the field that I've gotten into myself. Like, you start out as a personal trainer, but you can only get so far with reps and sets and programming. A lot of it is the same shit. Mm-hmm. And when it comes to like what goals are, I mean, yeah, you get to those physical goals, you get those strength goals, but you're not going to keep deadlifting 700 pounds or keep increasing your squat. Ultimately, that can keep you in fight or flight mode. The body doesn't necessarily know the difference. And once I had that aha moment, I was like, Okay, so exercise here can be a huge factor, but we got to look at it from another sense. So I think about exercise from a nervous system standpoint, and I try to give people what they need in terms of movement. Now, emotionally, can affect the physical. Physical can connect the emotional. I started seeing a chiropractor a year ago. I'm actually moving him into my facility because I'm so excited about what chiropractors bring to the table. So I'm going to have a facility with chiropractic health, physical therapy, and small group one-on-one training. Hopefully we can work symbiotically and give people another modality to healing where they can realize, hey, I'm in charge of my own healing. The power is in me. I could figure out how this can, you know, how I can essentially heal myself. So the way I work with my chiropractor, he's like, oh, how you doing? What's going on? How can I help you today? I go backwards. I say, here's how I'm feeling emotionally. So for example, I saw him today. I say, you know, I'm feeling a little bit of sadness, frustration, and anger, basically towards my father and some of my personal relationships right now. I just had a son. My dad lives in Italy. I'd love for him to come see him, but there's vaccine stipulations that are preventing him from coming here. He's not a U.S. citizen. He never got vaccinated for COVID. So now he's stuck over there. Long story short, I talked to him about what I was feeling there, like just kind of, you know, anger, resentment. And then from there, he typically treats me physically. So what do you know about this? How have you seen some patients, and what's your protocols? They tell you about how they feel emotionally. And then from there, how do you go about doing the work that you do physically?
So that's a great question. I have come to, you know, find that I have to work on people's emotions more than anything else. Mm-hmm. Not something that I love working on, to be honest, but just so many people need it.
Yeah.
Because your emotions don't live in your head. They live in your physiology. They live in your cells.
Our issues are in our tissues, so to speak.
100%. And so until we can make, this is one of my favorite quotes, which is by Carl Jung, or Jung, however you pronounce his name. He said that until you make the unconscious conscious, it'll rule your life and you'll call it fate. And so when you take that into perspective, there's another person by the name of Candace Pert who wrote, Molecules of Emotions, and how neuropeptides, every time you have an emotion, a nervous system protein is secreted, and that lives in your cells until you find a way of breaking that. And so that's some of the therapy that I'll do. One of them is called neuroemotional technique. It literally, using muscle testing, asks the subconscious mind, what's your main emotion? And then where does it remind you of in childhood? And then when you can go back to the original event, and you can do a quick 2-minute therapy on it, it's like erasing the whole email thread of emotions, which then changes the way you feel physically because you just broke the neuropeptide. Now, on the flip side, where do those live? In your nervous system. What do chiropractors excel at? Nervous system health. So you might have frustration, which in my practice, frustration is always a C4 in your neck and about T8, T9 in your spine, because that's the nerve supply, and T4 as well, nerve supply to the liver gallbladder, which is where people hold frustration.
Bingo.
And so when you can adjust that, you change the neurology, then your physiology lets go of what's been holding you down from an emotional reality perspective.
That's amazing. And so like a neutralization of past trauma.
Yes, exactly. That's amazing. So like you said, what do I ask patients? I'll always ask, because the patients that I see will come in with book reports of issues. You know, they have this autoimmune, they have this pain, they have this sleep issue, this digestive issue, you know, whatever it may be. And so what I like to do is I like to say, hey, if there was one or two things that we can change about your whole life, no matter what you heard or thought were possible, what would that be? And then I will focus on those two and go through, because I always want to treat the body, not the symptom. And so when I'm working on the patient, I'll be using frequency medicine, which is, I use a lot of things called hand modes, which is like sign language to your nervous system. It has a dialogue with your nervous system.
From your hands to their body.
Yes, because if you make it like hand mudras, like meditation stuff, in India, they would make different finger positions. What that does is generate a 3D image that generates a frequency. And that frequency, if that matches your nervous system distress signals, it will tell me, hey, that's the roadblock.
Whoa.
And so I will go through all these, there's about 300 of them, and they'll tell me, is it a parasite? Is it a virus? Is it an emotion? Is it a ligament off? Is it a disc issue? Is it a cranial nerve issue? Is it a spinal issue? Is it a fascia issue? Is it a tendon issue? Is it heavy metals? Is it food allergies? Is it hormone imbalance? Which hormone? Is it too low, too high? I mean, you can get really functional with it. And so I will actually prefer that people say less, because I want to go through the hand modes and see what their body perceives to be happening. So what they tell me, what they tell me is the symptom, but in my hand is the cause.
And that had to have been a skill that you've developed and still probably developing now into your career. And I'm sure like intuition might help you a great deal with pinpointing whatever some of those issues might be. So as far as like how your nervous system is when you're treating patients, what are some of your protocols to get yourself centered and an equilibrium, because you're kind of interacting with so many patients all the time, whether that's through Zoom or in person, but that's nervous system heavy. Same thing with me. I'm a trainer. I'm not only just taking through people through workouts, but I am breaking down conversation with them. What's going on? How's everything with your kids? How's everything with your job? How's everything with this? What are some of your goals? It's heavy on us emotionally. So what do you do? What do you do to get clear equilibrium so that you can pinpoint some of these things on your patients more effectively?
So I like to ground myself. I like to get my feet in the earth. I have some other technology things that I use to help ground. I also try to hydrate as best as possible.
Yep. You do salt in your water too?
I do a little bit of salt here and there, and I'll do different minerals as well.
Okay.
For me, something that helps me significantly is long showers, honestly.
Okay.
Just energetically rinsing off, because frequency is energy. And like you said, you were expelling our energy all day long. We need to get more of our good energy back in. And so I find that washing in the shower for a long time in hot water is really good for me. You know, it might not be for everybody from that perspective. I mean, everyone needs a shower, obviously, but might not, you know, be the ritual for you to...
Not the Liver King. The Liver King says he doesn't shower. I don't understand.
I mean, I don't know. That carnivore diet must be something special.
Yeah. For real. So why do you think it is that like holistic or chiropractors are more open to this holistic level of education versus Western medicine and different doctors? They just, you know, we specialize single things out. But here, you know, chiropractors are the only ones that I've seen that are more open to some of this information. Why do you think that is?
Because I think that chiropractic is the largest healing science and art that solely focuses on the power that made the body heals the body. And when you get into the whole Western medicine thing, you got to look all the way back to like 1913, when Rockefeller tried to monopolize the chemical industry, which became Big Pharma. And so what he did was he said, I'll give $500 million to any school that pushes chemicals, which became drugs. And anyone who doesn't, we will label them as quackery. So homeopaths, acupuncturists, chiropractors, naturopaths, all of them were shunned. And now it's been generations of this thought process that's been engraved subconsciously. I mean, if people can think about what they've seen in the last 2 years since 2020 and the whole mind manipulation, that's been going on for chiropractic since the early 1900s, and they just don't know it. And so it's the same kind of thing. And you know, people who, and it's not all chiropractors. I mean, there's chiropractors that are not great and
sure, are in anything.
Exactly. And so when I don't want to say that it's like all chiropractors across the board, I don't want to be that biased. But some chiropractors get in it for the money, and those are the people that don't do well. They're the people who fail out, because money follows value. And your values, when you bring value, you're basically just like projecting your passion, essentially. So money will always follow that regardless. And so, you know, from a Western medicine perspective, we have, I'm actually, tomorrow night, we're doing our podcast on the whole insurance game. We have a society that is built upon money, which makes sense. I mean, money makes the world go round, as the saying says. But as soon as you turn money into everything, then everything has to sacrifice for that money. And health is one of the biggest. I mean, every pharmaceutical company spends more money on advertising than research. They outlobby oil 2-1 in Washington. Like, that's insane. And then now you have companies, you know, I've been saying this for years, but now with the whole vaccine stuff coming out, these companies are not liable for any injuries. So what incentive do they have besides making a bunch of money and not having to spend it on research?
Yeah. You know, let's talk a little bit about some of the manipulation the last 2.5 years. I've been reluctant to talk about this. I mean, I was alone in my camp. I was building my business throughout the pandemic. I started hitting it pretty big prior to the pandemic. I quit my teaching job in 2019 and I really started going in hardcore. Then the pandemic hits and then, you know, we're on the, you know, 2 week to flatten the curve, but just 2 weeks. Yep. And then there the manipulation kind of starts and it's like, all right, well, I'm working for myself. I don't have anyone telling me what to do. No one's coming to save me. I got to go out there and figure out a way to hustle. And in this time, more than any time, people need quality exercise, people to teach them quality exercise, get their heart rates up and, you know, essentially go through some of this, talk about some of this information and what's happening. So, you know, I was doing this by myself, but then, you know, the manipulation starts pouring in. It's 2 weeks to flatten the curve. Then the whole mask thing, which kind of made me go a little crazy. First, it was put the mask on. Then there was a reprieve. Then nobody was wearing masks. Then it's intense again, put the mask back on. And I'm sitting here by myself like, what the fuck is going on? This is ridiculous. You know, the flu still exists. No one got the flu for 2.5 years. You know, being face to face with people were talking about how this was going to really impact you. But I was just like in groups with kids, in groups with small, you know, with small groups with women and adults, and not one case, zero cases, but everyone's got their panties up in a twist. And I feel like the deep state or the people that were really controlling this understood or understands that this type of fear mongering gets people vulnerable. This way we can control. And I know that may sound conspiratorial, but when it comes
to health, 100% spot on.
Yeah. And people are afraid to talk about this. And this happens in the corporate world. People are forced onto something at expense of something happening to you, like cutting your existence, firing you, completely taking your money away, and completely, you know, talking or taking away your travel, or even worse, canceling you when you're putting out information. We saw several doctors being canceled. So this was a mind game. There's still some mass formation psychosis kind of going on. Talk to me about this and like what your thoughts are. And now that we're, you know, almost 3 years into this, there's going to be some PTSD, some repercussions that are happening because of this. What are your thoughts about all of it? And where do you think this kind of ends up?
So I love that we're talking about this because this is, you know, such good stuff. When February 2020 was going on, that's when our daughter was born on Valentine's Day of 2020. And we had some visitors come to California. I was still in California at that time. And they said, so what do you think about this? You know, what do you think about this coronavirus? And I said, well, do you want my real thoughts or you want to hear what you want to hear? And they're like, oh, let's see what you really think. And I said, well, this virus has been funded by your tax dollars for years at the University of North Carolina. And then it got pushed over to the Wuhan lab. And how convenient that they're basically creating this virus and they get it out on an election year.
Yeah, perfect timing.
Perfect timing. After you got people like Bill Gates going around saying we can depopulate the world with vaccines. You got Anthony Fauci out there saying that that we can pretty much expect a pandemic to happen soon. And then you have a government in China who hates Donald Trump, who are also best friends with people who are running against Trump. And so you're going to get this virus out that will cause hysteria, because in hysteria comes votes, because people get in fear and then they're looking for a solution to their fear. And that's what politicians are so good at doing, is preying upon people's fear. So they're going to, so I, from day one, said, this is completely political and it's going to be politicized. And what's going to happen is they're going to go after people who don't like vaccines. They're going to try to squash the anti-vax movement, because they're going to say that, oh, if you don't get this vaccine, you don't care about your fellow neighbor.
Yeah. And that's then, right there.
100%. And then what they're going to do is, because people are catching on that, and this is still what I think is going to happen. So I'm saying it here. People are catching on that pharmaceuticals don't build health. They just don't. So what they're going to do is, oh, you don't have to take this pill the rest of your life. Here's a vaccine that takes care of alcoholism for you, or migraines for you, or cancer for you. Oh, you don't want to get this vaccine? Are you an anti-vaxxer? Do you remember 2020 when all those anti-vaxxers were dying, which they weren't? They're going to use it for the rest of our existence in medicine. And that's what I was saying in 2020. Most of that has come true. This last one, I think, is the future of where they'll take it. And so, yeah, I mean, it depends on, you know, what day they want you to see what, right? We got, you know, police officers who were, you know, talked so down upon. You got they love the race war. They love to create something out of nothing. Honestly, I feel like we all as human beings love each other, and they just want, they show you a little clip of something of just a terrible human being, and they make it that it's the generalization for the rest of that race or career or whatever.
Yeah.
I can't stand that, because I have friends of all different colors and we all get along great, phenomenally.
Yeah.
So I think it's like you said, mass psychosis. You know, case in point 101. For the rest of our existence, every time someone coughs in an airplane or next to somebody, everyone's first thought will be COVID.
Yeah, I'm hoping that it subsides slowly but surely. People fucking sneeze, man.
I know.
It's not,
I mean,
the end of the world, you know, it's you know, we all are programmed.
Mm-hmm.
Every day we're programming ourselves unconscious, hopefully consciously. I think self-awareness is a big thing. This is why I like to talk about being in fight or flight versus rest and digest, and teaching your body to go through the switches with some of these protocols like flow training, hot cold therapy, fasting, making sure you're getting your sleep right, anti-inflammatory foods, journaling, talk therapy, chiropractic care, you name it. Getting yourself into a rest and digest state, I really feel like you could unprogram and reprogram new sets so that you could create your life in the way that you're consciously creating your life.
Right.
When it comes to the whole fear thing, people freak out, and that's when a collective can be reprogrammed. And it just seemed like in that 2.5 years, like, you know, nobody got the flu, nobody got a cough. It was COVID all the time, and it was tested positive. Why are we still fucking testing?
Yep.
I just, you know, and going back to the PCR test, I remember hearing about this back in 2020, in the beginning, like it wasn't meant to test for COVID, yet this is what everybody's first inclination was to do. Get
That's
tested.
Right.
I feel safe. Like, it's scary. And this made me really kind of just, first opened up what the political spectrum was to me, what left mm-hmm. and what right was. And it was unclear at the time. I was like, I understand now where this is going. And a lot of it was just a guilt trip. You know, if you don't abide, then you are a detriment to our society. You're 4 people dying. And it's like, what? I'm a healthcare practitioner. I'm somebody that does this for a living, and none of this resonates with me. I never thought once to get COVID vaccine. I never thought to get a flu shot, and not because I'm an anti-vaxxer. I'm not. It's just, it didn't resonate with me. I never saw a clear path. Yes, this is what I have to do. And
right.
I was not in a situation with my work that told me, hey, you have to do this or else you don't work. And God forbid, I never want to be in that position. And I don't want my worst enemy to be in that position ever, because we live in the United States and we should have the freedom to express ourselves freely. Now, going back to expressing yourself freely, do you feel mm-hmm. like if you are not on the path to something whole or purposeful, or if you're not expressing your truest nature, do you feel like that could be detrimental to your health long term, and where diseases might stem from if you are doing and saying something that's not true in your heart and soul? Is there some truth to that?
100%. I was actually just, I don't remember who I was watching. It may have been Jordan Peterson. I can't remember who I was watching, but they said the cause of all depression generally is lack of purpose. And if you're not living out your purpose, you're not living life to its fullest. And so it's all about finding your gift. I can't remember, is it Pablo something who said it, like The goal of life to, or the meaning of the goal of life is to like find your gift. And the meaning of it is to give your gift away, essentially. Mm-hmm. And it's so true. Like I watch all these people who go to work, and when I'm doing emotional work, most of the time it's money and love. Those are the two most, biggest stressors to people, money and love. And money is career, job, finances, all of that. And love is relationship with you, higher power, yourself, your friends, your family, all that type of stuff. And so I noticed that people just don't like what they do. They wake up, they work from 9 to 5, they get a paycheck, they go out on the weekends, they drink a bunch of alcohol, because that keeps them numb to the life that they don't like. And so like when I started learning all this stuff, I knew when I first got my first treatment of the way that I treat frequency and muscle testing and all that, it was like a light bulb went off. I knew that it was a big moment in my life. I just didn't know what it was. I could feel it. And so in that moment, I made a promise to myself that I will learn everything in this realm to the best of my ability to be a vessel for people who have been failed on everywhere and who are just looking for solutions to their health issues. And that caused me to be more of what people would say a recluse. You know, he's not, Charlie doesn't go out anymore. He doesn't go out till 5 in the morning. He doesn't drink a bunch. He doesn't do this. He's starting to eat clean. And for me, it was changing my frequency in a different path. And so instead of looking at it from a, I'm lame, I just found my purpose. And that's for the rest of life, I'll be learning all day, every day about how to improve that. And so I think when people don't have something that they absolutely love in life, which is generally going to be your purpose, then they fall into depression, anxiety, or the lifestyle of pleasure. And pleasure will get you into some dark times, because pleasure is always temporary. It's never long lasting, essentially. And so they'll always look for that next fix.
Yeah.
And then that will, you know, if the saying is that if you're not, you can't coast in life. If you're not going, if you're not building your health, you're building your purpose, you're just coasting through life. And the only way to coast is downhill. You can never coast uphill. It's impossible.
Yeah. And I guess with the digital technology today, it's like, it's unlimited amount of pleasure that can be just, you know, at your fingertips all the time. Gambling, sex, shopping, you name it, like it's right there, and it instantaneously hits you with dopamine, and it's never ending. And you know, the worst part about like social media in general, yes, it's great, it connects us, you know, we can send a clear message that's ultimately helpful. Like I owe a lot to YouTube and Instagram and Facebook for just the people that I've connected with and the information that I've learned over time. The downside effect is that it's not free. We're paying for it with our data, one. And two, we're paying for it with just being manipulated by whatever the narrative of those algorithms are. And algorithms are always changing and developing, and we're changing. And it's all the new things that we look and share and are just kind of searching for get put into that algorithm, and we keep, you know, and it keeps going, and it's just this cycle that's never ending. And if we're not self-aware enough to say, hey, we're on the phone 9 hours a fucking day, what is that doing to my eyes? What's that doing to my nervous system overall? What's that doing to my hormones? What's that doing to my, just my drive to add value to the world, which is such a fundamental piece for our own health and wellness. And you know, I'm ranting here, but ultimately, like, I want a solution for myself to heal first. And that's forcing me to just keep on pushing this out into the world and share it to whoever will listen to find alternative modalities of healing, which is like, you know, my ultimate goal here. Let's like transition.
Before we transition, we start off by saying, you know, with all this, like you said, you know, Facebook connected you and I. We're on Zoom. Instagram has connected us. It's all great things, but the question is, at what cost to our health? We always have to ask that question.
Yeah, it's a big question. And it's sometimes, a lot of times, unknown, right? We don't necessarily see what some of the negative factors are from, you know, just having these headphones in, you know, a few hours every day. And what's that compounded, right? This is new technology. We don't know what that's going to, where that's going to lead us in the next, you know, 10 to 100 years or whatever. I like to think about living much longer and much more meaningful lives, as a 34-year-old, and giving this, learning this information that we learn now and kind of just practicing day in and day out. Do you think that guys like you and I, given the fact that we manage our nervous system health, have the potential to live to 120, 150, 170? Do you think it can be that deep, or what are your thoughts?
My soul wants to say yes, but we live in such a toxic society, honestly, that I think it's going to make it hard to live like that. Mm. Do I think that as a society, we're obsessed with quantity and not quality. And so we think that good health is living longer, but again, at what expense? Sure. I'd rather have 70 quality years than 100 with the last two decades being absolutely miserable and, need everyone in my life to help me because I can't do anything on my own. Yeah, so I think that you and I, putting the work in, because the universe rewards the action step, I think that we will live so much more of a quality life. It's hard for me to say the quantity of that life, though.
Okay, fair. I love it. Yeah. Very good. And hopeful, optimistic. Yep. I've been listening and reading several Gabor Mate books and interviews, psychologists talking about a lot of different things. But he talks about ADHD and ADAD being, much more prevalent in today's society, more and more kids being diagnosed. Mm-hmm. A lot of folks want to say it's a genetic thing, but what Dr. Gabor Mate talks about, it's not necessarily genetic. It's the characteristic of sensitivity being passed on from parent to kid, and our inability to self-regulate. Mm-hmm. Clinically, what has your experience been treating children with ADD, ADHD? Do you feel like this sensitivity characteristic is a thing, and is our inability to self-regulate causing this more and more as time goes on?
Yeah, I would definitely agree. In my experience with ADD, ADHD, any type of focus, it goes down to your toxic load, because the main neurotransmitter that is good for focus is acetylcholine and GABA. And when GABA is low, you go towards anxiety and thoughts that can't shut down, which essentially is ADD, ADHD. Now, I think our school systems, how we put kids at a desk and then give them an hour for lunch and then they're just sitting around all day, I think that is unfair to them. Mm-hmm. I think our lymphatic system gets clogged because it moves through muscle contraction. We need movement. Our ancestors were hunters and gatherers. We need to move genetically. And so I think that plays a big role. I think the diet that we consume with food colorings and fake food, when I was in California, I would always do this analogy, and I'm a huge car fan. Cars are also my second passion. So I always do car analogies. And so I would say, okay, so you have this, $400,000 sports car that you would never think twice about putting less than premium fuel in your car. But your human body is worth, I've heard a living human body, if you were to sell every part, sounds morbid, is worth $45 million. That's what I've heard. And so we're so quick to go in for ease and stuff, go through a drive-through. And that's like putting worse than the minimum amount of fuel in your supercar. Would you ever do that? They're like, no, but now that you put it that way. And so I think that the foods that we have has created so much deficiency in growth in our brains and stuff that kids, you're seeing the effect in these generations. And I think that also, the biggest thing I find in patients when I treat clinically is subclinical infections, parasites, bacteria, viruses, candida, mold, yeast, Lyme, Epstein-Barr virus, cytomegalovirus, all the herpes family viruses, all the different bacterias. That is my day in a nutshell, is finding all that type of stuff. And what that will do is that will secrete chemicals that deplete your neurotransmitters. And so especially GABA. So now when people are low on GABA, they have three things: mind that can't shut down, irritability, and sleep issues. How many people do you know that can't stop thinking, have sleep issues, and are irritable?
So many.
It's everyone in a nutshell.
And that's straight from diet, essentially.
It's from
putting
diet.
Poor quality food.
Yes. And I think that we get infections from our environment. I think we get infections from, our pets, from certain foods. Like in California, everyone loves sushi. Sushi's loaded with parasites. And so, you know, beyond that, even in utero, you could be born with a viral issue or born with a parasite issue from mom. I'm actually talking about parasites tonight in my membership because it's so, if there was one thing I could do chemically with people, it would be to deworm them. That's how important parasites are for our health and making sure that our microbiome is balanced. I mean, our microbiome is everything. It's our gut. We have, in my opinion, I think every organ has its own microbiome.
Okay.
And we're just touching the surface of just talking about gut health. I think there's bladder flora and microbiome. I think there's a heart microbiome. I think there's a brain microbiome. I think it's all these microbiomes. And that is the sole biggest thing that I find helps the people who have been failed on everywhere.
Amazing. How do you talk about diet with your patients, and how do you get them to switch, or do you do some sort of like no diet diet, elimination diet, food logging? What are some of the protocols you use?
Yeah, it's a great question. So I use vial testing. Vials are like little, they look like perfume sample kits, and they hold resonant frequencies. So I'll have vials of all the major food groups, and I will see what people are reacting to from a muscle testing standpoint. And so I'll check the major ones: gluten, dairy, corn, soy, egg, caffeine, chocolate, nightshades. And then I have random ones of different fruits and veggies. And I'll usually pull them off whatever they're reacting to the most. Because if I tell them how to eat solely, like you have to eat this way, it's very overwhelming.
Yeah.
And then they have to go and throw out everything in their household and stuff. So I'll usually take away like the two, three, or four food groups that they're reacting to and start there. I think in a general, I go towards a Mediterranean / paleo / carnivore type diet. I am getting back and forth into blood type diet. I don't know if you're familiar with the blood type diet.
No.
So basically the blood type diet, which a lot of people, again, will say it's been debunked, but if you look at how it's been debunked, it doesn't make sense. And so off of your blood type, you have certain receptors or things called lectins that either when you eat a food that has certain lectins, it either binds or it doesn't bind. And when it binds, your metabolism, your immune system, everything works, supposed to be better. The rationale behind it is on your genes, your blood type gene is right next to your digestive gene and your immune system gene. So through gene linkage, they affect one another significantly. And it's fascinating because there's four blood types. So there's four different diets that people would thrive on. So it's very, I like, because it's individualized from a genetic standpoint, and it's not the same for everybody. Cause I don't think there is like one thing that's for everybody.
I agree.
However, I have seen people who should eat one way, but do better eating a different blood type diet. So I think there's wiggle room with it. But these are things where, like, we call it practice, like seeing patients where I'm in private practice. I try these things with patients and see the outcomes, and it might work well. And in 2 years, I might find that it doesn't hold up like it used to. And so I'm always like evolving. And that's one of the biggest ones I've been seeing lately is blood type diet.
Interesting. Talk to me about your muscle testing. What's that look like?
So essentially you're testing a deltoid muscle, and it's not a strength contest. It is a neurological tone contest. So someone will hold out a straight arm, and then I will put pressure on the arm, and I'll see if it locks or if it doesn't lock. And if there's no neurological lock to a stimulus, so say I have like a, we'll talk gluten. I'll have a gluten vial and I'll put it in their field. I usually just put it over the chest because it's easy. And then I'll say, okay, resist. And if they can resist, okay, the body's adaptable. But if they cannot resist, there's an issue that their system cannot adapt to. And so that is so much more specific than doing, blood tests can be specific for food sensitivities, but skin testing is not. So people will go to the allergist, they'll prick their skin, they'll say, nope, you're good with gluten. But then I'll find that when they got off gluten, it changed their whole health picture. So, you know, their test missed it. And so I use muscle testing because it picks up about 3% dysfunction, whereas blood test takes about 40%.
Interesting. Yeah, because this is some stuff that I wonder if, you know, if I'm always constantly learning and looking to evolve, like how can I better help my clients with some of these testing? Is it something that a trainer can do? Does it have to be done by a chiropractor? Like, what are your thoughts about that?
So I mean, I think that a trainer would be able to do it. There's definitely some programs that teach muscle testing that's more for like the basics of it. I mean, when you get into treating autoimmunity and Lyme and mold and all these deep-rooted neurological infections, it might not be in your wheelhouse, obviously, but that's not what you signed up for.
Right, right.
And I didn't sign up for it either. I just found myself in it because I guess that was my gift.
Yeah. So I want to break that down a little bit more. Were you like a health guy in high school? Was that something that you were working out? I know you played basketball, but like, where did this calling come from and why do you want to help people so badly?
So my biological father is a professional bodybuilder and he's in Bridgeview, Illinois. And so I would go, when I was growing up, I would go to his house every other weekend. And I would hang out in a gym, a hardcore gym. It's called USA Gym. I'd hang out there every single weekend or every other weekend. So I was always around people who were taking supplements and protein shakes and fitness, even though fitness doesn't always equal health, as you obviously know. But I was around people who held themselves accountable and were really, really happy when they gained success in their journey. And so I knew I wanted to go into health. But I ate crap. I slept with the TV on all night. I did all the stuff that I know now breaks down your health. And so I was the kid who, whenever the cold was going around, I caught it. Whenever I caught it, it turned into a sinus infection. Had all these weird skin reactions. I played basketball. I was a decent basketball player. So loved basketball. But then last half of senior year, I got mono. I was in the hospital for a month and a half in Lutheran General, I was in the hospital for 2 weeks, but I was out of school for a month and a half. And so I thought I wanted to be a pharmacist because I was on medication all the time. And then that's when I did job shadowing and found like, I can't talk to pills. It's just not for me. And so I knew I wanted to get into medicine. And then I heard a quote that said, essentially what life is about is to provide value to the world and help people in that process. And so I knew that's what I wanted to do. And that kind of solidified it. But then when I found chiropractic, it got me into, it got me to go to chiropractic school. And then in chiropractic school, I found all this other stuff that I learned on the weekends at all the seminars, where there was, I was always the youngest person in the room. There was doctors coming in from all over the world at all these different seminars that would tell the stories of how they've helped these people who have been to every major hospital, gone to Germany, gone to all these countries with better medicine, and still weren't getting help until they saw this doc. And I knew that I wanted to be in those rooms. So I was like a sponge. I didn't say much. I just literally took it in so much. And then that's pretty much what put me on the path of learning, you know, how to eat, learning emotional health, learning all of these biochemical things going on with people and EMF and all these toxins. And, you know, it just kind of takes you into wherever it takes you.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. How deep do you go in the spiritual realm? Like, do you think about a higher power? Do you think having a connection to something bigger than you is important and essential to long-term health? When I was growing up, I never really had any sort of connection to God or anything. We grew up Catholic, but I was always like kind of turned off by church and the priests and confession and all this stuff. I never felt like it resonated with me. Yep. However, in the last like 5 years, as I've kind of gone through meditations and understanding about the nervous system, taking psychedelic adventures, yep, I've learned that there's something bigger than just you, and our consciousness is just a piece of gigantic cosmic fabric. I wanted to get your take on this and how deep do you go with it and how much does it influence the way you think?
So like you, I grew up Catholic. I think I went to 8 schools by the time I was in college. I moved around a lot.
Grade schools?
Yeah, grade schools, middle school. Like I moved to Park Ridge when I was in 8th grade. And before that, I was in Wildwood. I was in Lincoln Park. I was in Bridgeport. I was in Oak Lawn. My mom and I moved around all the time. And so I went between different Catholic schools and then public schools and Catholic schools. So I kind of saw both. And like you, I didn't really resonate with church. I thought it was forced upon people.
Yeah.
I felt like, again, it was the guilt of, if you don't go to church, you're a sinner. And I couldn't... without knowing I didn't resonate with it, because I, at that young, I just didn't really have that vocabulary.
Sure.
I just knew I didn't resonate with it. But getting into practice, getting into muscle testing, getting into frequency medicine, I think spirituality is absolutely critical. If you don't believe in something higher than yourself, life can be tough. And we are part of the collective. And so I think that we're all, as you know, we're all connected. And even if you can't see that connection, it's there. And you said you've taken psychedelic trips and stuff, and that's when you can really see it, obviously.
Yeah. Yeah.
And then I just moved to Nashville, which is Bible Belt. So a lot of people around here are Christian. And it's, I'm the type of person where I don't want to judge. I want to experience it the way that you experienced it. And instead of you telling me about it, because I want to see what made you come into this realm. And so I've been playing with going to Bible studies, because I want to go into and see like scripture stuff and how they interpret it rather than church. And so I think that if you view religion from a spiritual aspect, there's a lot of good in it. But if you gotta take away from the hypocrisy of some of it.
I agree.
And so, you know, some of my, you know, good friends here are diehard Christians, and there's a guy named Tim Keller. Are you familiar with him? Mm-mm. He's out of New York. Yeah. He's a heavy Christian, and he does a podcast called Questioning Christianity. And what he does is he goes at it from an atheist standpoint and then all in on Christianity standpoint. And it's really fascinating, because he's definitely a really good intellectual. And those are the types of conversations that I like. I also listen to Jordan Peterson. I think Jordan Peterson does a great job when he's like, look, the Bible's been around for 3,000 years. It deserves to be studied. What else has survived that long?
Yeah. Yeah. He does a lot of good analogies from the Bible in his books.
Yes.
12 Rules for Life, Beyond Order. There are several analogies that, and that's the thing, you take it as an interpretation, not like this literal sense.
Yeah.
You know, everything inside of you is a reflection of the outside. The outside world is a reflection of your inside world. These are concepts. It's not like a actual reflection. It's just, you know, these are, it's a, like I said, a concept to think about. What's on your inside is just a mirror of your outside, how you look at the world, your observing point, the emotions that you are driving each and every behavior, right? If something is coming from a guilt, like if you're doing something out of guilt, if you're doing something out of, you know, being resentful or nihilistic, these can be really slippery slopes where it's like, what is the meaning of all this? And what is the, like, nothing matters. And if you start thinking about things in a sense where nothing matters, and you know, you become really nihilistic, that is a real you know, dark time potentially. You can be slipping down something that you can be by yourself, alone, and then questioning the meaning of life, and that can be really hard. Although it is a healthy thing to question the meaning of life, I think it's the one of the most fundamental things about just being curious about the mysteries of the cosmos. And I feel like some sort of spiritual quest, a hero's journey, connects you to something bigger that gives you some sort of purpose and meaning. I think that's really important for a wellness journey.
You know? And you said, how do I connect it to my treatments? I mean, the biggest thing that I can do is hold space for that person to heal.
Yes.
And when people have said, you changed my life, you know, whatever diagnosis was reversed and all this stuff, I make sure that they know that none of it was me. I'm just a vessel asking the nervous system questions. And what chiropractic preaches is you heal from above down and inside out. And so that is what I always stay to, because look, if I don't help somebody, I did my best. It is up to the powers that be. And so I definitely stay on that. Take no credit, take no blame. And I think that holding that type of space spiritually, because people want to have hope and they want to be heard. I mean, that's enough for people to get on the healing path.
Yeah. Amen, dude. That's fantastic. We've been chatting for just about 55 minutes. It feels like no time has passed.
Yeah.
I like to think time being an illusion. The more I do deep meditations, the more I realize that, you know, we're here in the present. And if we're constantly thinking about the future or dwelling on something from the past, that's sucking energy away. So, you know, when we think about meditation and focusing on the breathing or just getting into a workout, doing flow training, you're taking all that energy that's being pushed out, in the future or in the past, and you're pulling it back in, giving yourself the energy that it takes to heal and become the best version of you, essentially. I think these are really interesting topics. But going back on time being an illusion, I feel like I've had several instances where, you know, just in meditation, where it happened just like that. And it was like, yeah, I'm in there for 20 minutes, just focusing on my breath. Didn't feel like it, but it just went by like that. In psychedelics, you know, I've had trips where it was like, what is even reality? I'm questioning what this physical realm is, this third dimension. And that is, you know, bizarre type of experiences. So before we close out, let's talk about psychedelics. Do you have you had experiences with them? Is it a route that you want to go? Do you want to learn more about the psyche in that regard? You know, there's MDMA psychoassisted therapy, there's ketamine psychoassisted therapy, ayahuasca ceremonies. What are your thoughts about this when it comes to healing?
So I think psilocybin has a huge future of medicine. I've seen people who have had chronic back pain, and I've been working on them and nothing's been budging, and they do an ayahuasca session and it's gone. And so I've never done ayahuasca. I'm not totally into trips for whatever reason. It's probably like, cause I feel like I'll be out of control and there's probably a control factor to it.
Very scary for sure.
Yeah. And so like for me, if I do psilocybin, I like micro dosing. I feel like, cause I don't do any caffeine, I don't do any stimulants. I feel like psilocybin is really good concentration. It's like a natural Adderall, I would say. I've never even taken Adderall because I never had to.
I've never taken Adderall either.
Yeah, how people can say like, oh, my focus is on point, I can think clearer. That's my experience on psilocybin.
Yeah, microdosing, you said.
Yeah, I love it. I think it's phenomenal. I mean, I don't do it that often, but I'm not against it by any means. I think that THC and marijuana has a huge place in medicine too. I do credit marijuana as saving part of my life when I was in college. Honestly, I had an awful health crash and I didn't know that any of this medicine existed. And I couldn't even go out to bars or anything with loud music, cause I would pretty much vomit. That's how overly sympathetic dominant I was.
Wow.
I was studying pre-med. I was studying from 8 p.m. to 2 in the morning. My circadian rhythms were totally flipped. And summer going into sophomore year of college, I couldn't eat food without feeling nauseous. I couldn't be around people without feeling nauseous. I couldn't listen to music without feeling, my whole nervous system was fried.
Wow.
And I went to my medical doctor. You know, he said, you have acid reflux. Here's proton pump inhibitors, which is one of the worst medications you can ever go on. And a year of that with nothing getting better and just kind of just reclusing myself and studying, I decided one night that, you know, I'm going to stay in with my roommates. Took one hit of weed. I mean, I've smoked weed before that, you know, not much, but probably haven't for like a year and a half prior to that. One hit. I'm telling you, all of that feeling left my body.
Amazing.
In 10 minutes. And I just spent a year trying to listen to medical doctors about what they thought was going on with me. And so I know that they're, you know, the plant can be estrogenic. There can be fungus and mycotoxins if it's not clean. I get all of that. But all I'm saying is open your mind to, if they can do that, there is a lot of good that can come when it's used properly.
Totally. Totally. Yeah. I'm with you on that. I never touched cannabis until I was like 24. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, when I started, and I had one experience like that too. And it was just like catharsis, boom, overload, like, you know, I like to say I saw the matrix, or at least a fraction of it. And when you see the matrix, you can't unsee it. And then there's deeper levels to how far consciousness, the matrix of consciousness, goes. And I've been obsessed the last 5 years on learning more and more about some of these modalities, hence why I'm in the field that I'm in. And I'm connecting with people like you to, I guess, break down some of the deeper levels of this kind of stuff. So I want to respect your time, Dr. Charlie. This has been fantastic.
Yeah, it's been great. Thanks for having me, man. This is awesome.
Yeah, anytime, dude. I really like your show and the dynamic that you have with the nurse practitioner. I think you're putting out some really good pieces of information. I'd love to do this again sometime in the new year and just kind of catch up and see how life is going. I'm actually interviewing Gina in a couple weeks.
Nice.
So I'm really excited about that.
Yeah, she's great. She'll be over at our house on Thursday. Our daughters are going to play.
Awesome, dude. That's great. Yeah, we connected a couple of years back. We did a podcast. She's in the same kind of movement space that I'm in. And, you know, she did some education with Onnit. That's how I connected with her. We did a podcast a couple of years back. But yeah, man, I'm really excited that you guys know each other and it's such a small world. I really feel like some of the information that you're giving out here will resonate with people in Park Ridge, just because like you went to Maine South and there's so many Maine South people that come through my gym, parents, kids, alums. Cool. And I'm connected with the school and the culture of Park Ridge that is this, you know, winning culture, this strong, enthusiastic, passionate culture. So I think a lot of the things that you're saying here will resonate with the local crowd here. So yeah, man, I really appreciate it. Tell me where people can tell the podcast listeners where they can find more information on you and then that program that you do as well.
Yeah. So I just use Instagram and the tag is drcharliedc_2.0. Because the original Dr. Charlie DC talked a little too much about vaccines and Instagram did not like that. And so I had to start over last July. But I started a membership. That's what you're talking about, which is a digital library where I do about 3 hours a month of Q&A. Anyone can ask me anything. And then I do two topics, like this week is parasites, next week is autoimmune. And I do about a 30-minute video that breaking it down from structural, chemical, and emotional components. And so my goal is to build a library so that you can type in a buzzword in the search bar and it'll pull up everything I've ever talked about it. And that's kind of where it's going.
Love it.
Yeah, because there's a lot of clinical experience with knowledge that I don't think many people know about. And I kind of want to get it off of Instagram and into a place that will, you know, be there forever, because I don't know if Instagram will. And then we Red Pill Your Health Cast on Spotify and Apple. Me and Lauren Johnson, who's a natural nurse mom on Instagram, we just, you know, break down some medical stuff that is always a fun conversation. And we just have fun. It's all about having fun. If you're not having fun, it ain't worth doing it.
I agree, man. Yeah. And the dynamic that you guys have is definitely a fun one and educational. So keep doing what you're doing. It's really inspiring. You're really clear and concise. I think your message is going out there and it's hitting home. It's hitting hard. Definitely for me. So again, appreciate your time. I'll post all this up in a week or so, 2 weeks maybe, and then hit you up with all the content too.
Perfect, man. Looking forward to it.
Everything. So all awesome. Right, man. Appreciate you. You have a wonderful day, and then we'll catch up soon. Okay.
Likewise, brother.
All right, man. Be well.